Section 1. My Existence, the State of Things, and Fundamental Problems. Section Themes. Establishing or setting a foundation of reality. I exist, other people exist. The important concept of forgiveness exists and it is not physical. People, and sometimes me, do a lot of bad stuff each day, causing much conflict, neglect, hurt, pain, and suffering. Thus, our or my existence could be much better. Chapter 1. A Reasonable Basis for Religious and Spiritual Beliefs. Opening Questions. Is it reasonable to believe that a creator of the human race exists? Why are there so many religious people on the planet? What is the most reasonable answer to account for my existence? Can atoms, molecules, proteins, cells, tissues, organs, and organ systems adequately account for what I experience as a human being? Does science have the tools to adequately explain certain aspects of human nature, the human experience, and origin questions? A book of this title is likely to attract readers of many different beliefs. It is reasonable to think that some of those who are hostile towards, or at least very skeptical of, Christian religion would be interested in reading this book. That is a good thing, and I hope they do. There is much to be upset about Christianity and Christians, especially their wrong beliefs about God and the hypocrisy that many practice. However, just because Christians have many wrong beliefs and practices does not mean that they are wrong about everything. Stated another way, just because the Christian poisons the well does not mean the well does not exist. Furthermore, just because many Christians are hypocrites does not mean that all are. There are sincere, loving people who are Christians, and to deny such just proves that the one doing the denying really needs to read this book and learn from it. It is a very common practice when dealing with someone with whom you disagree or have basic disagreements with to reject everything they say or believe. This is not only a very negative and destructive habit, and one which prevents communication from taking place, but it is erroneous. This very negative dynamic is very common amongst people who hold sincere political or religious beliefs. For those who can receive it, to be a truly exceptional human being means you will listen to the other side, and you will use reason in a compassionate and empathetic way to try and arrive at truth. Imagine how much communication would improve between the political left and right in the US, for example, if they strove to practice that principle. We will look to see how truly tolerant we are of other people in a later chapter. The beliefs which are the source of disagreement oftentimes prevent the people from getting to know each other, even in a cursory way. For people to understand each other, communication must take place, and when it does not, people remain ignorant of each other's important views, and thus no bridges can be built to the other side. People will remain fearful and will tend to judge too quickly or stereotype and reject. If left to ourselves, we naturally withdraw and build walls or defenses due to our nature, as we will see. The simple truth is that we as human beings in general are insecure in our fundamental beliefs about reality, or stated another way, we are insecure in exploring our existential beliefs. Existential means of existence, or attempts to understand our existence. This insecurity is an aspect of fear and is manifest when we get defensive when talking about something. We will take a closer look at why that is true later on. Before we take a close look at why Christianity is a successful failure, we need to first establish some framework to make judgments about the world in general, as well as Christian beliefs or practices which exist within that world. In other words, we must have some high-level grasp on reality and be able to understand and accurately describe it in order to make good judgments of beliefs or practices that interact or intersect with that reality. If I just stay within a Christian worldview, for example, I will not be able to properly and effectively evaluate Christianity. We must come from a higher, more objective perspective in order to objectively evaluate Christianity. This perspective or framework is important, especially for the person who is reading this book with the purpose of affirming that their judgments about Christianity or Christians are correct. To do that well, we have to establish some facts regarding a worldview, since Christianity is a worldview. In other words, we cannot make judgments well in a vacuum. With no points of reference or no larger context, nothing can be properly understood. We need facts to establish some framework in order to make good judgments. For example, before you could find your way to some destination, you need geographical facts in order to do so. So if you were trying to find your way to Chicago after someone left you in the middle of a forest in central Canada, and you had no idea where you were on the earth and no directional tools to help you, that would be a very difficult endeavor. Or as another example, before you could do a good job at placing a hospital in a city, you would first need to know the existing layout of the city. If you do not understand the entire layout, you might well place the hospital where it would not be easily accessed or utilized optimally by the majority of this population. So it is with determining exactly why and how Christianity and Christians are a successful failure. We must build a framework to account for reality. We must have some basic understanding of the larger world of which Christianity and its inheritance are a part. As noted above and in general, when someone does not like something, he has a pre-existing bias, then it is very common to make the mistake of throwing the baby out with the bathwater, also known as the hasty generalization fallacy. That fallacy is given illustration by the baby and bathwater saying. If you have ever washed a dirty baby that you love, the saying will make perfect sense. You don't throw the valuable thing out, the baby, with that which is invaluable, the dirty bathwater. Rather, we should only throw out that which is invaluable. In the case of concepts or beliefs and using reason to understand those concepts or beliefs, we should not dismiss or ignore that which is true, the baby, because we don't like the wrong or erroneous things surrounding it or associated with it, the dirty bathwater. For example, a person might observe a Christian or Christians behaving hypocritically, the bathwater, and as a result rejects, dismisses, or does not consider the possibility that Jesus or Joshua of Nazareth is accurately represented in the four gospel books, the baby. This is a rejection based on fallacious reasoning with a wrong conclusion. The only right conclusion from looking at Christianity's dirty bathwater, so to speak, is to rightly judge that the bathwater is dirty and unworthy of partaking in. However, if we are a truly exceptional person, perhaps helping those who hold to the beliefs and practices of the dirty bathwater to see the error of their ways would be the right and noble thing to do, even if nothing comes of it. So let us start in on this adventure and spend a bit of time building this framework to gain the larger perspective that best represents reality and thus be in a good position to judge Christianity and the Christians who make it up a successful failure. Let's start by asking the questions, what is religion and is it reasonable for people to have religious beliefs and practices? New section title, Simple, Undeniable Existential Truths, The Basics of Reality. Certain facts about reality are undeniable and human existence is really quite simple. We exist and interact with other people and things on this planet. We have basic biological needs that we must meet in order for our bodies to remain alive, food, clothing, and shelter. We have a strong urge to express sexuality. We have a strong social need to be accepted, affirmed, and involved with others. We have a spiritual need to have a clear conscience and thus to be forgiven of our wrongs and free from guilt. Furthermore, we are self-aware beings with the ability to evaluate our surroundings, interactions, and experiences with a rational mind. We can know truth and rightness, and we do, in fact, apply those judgments in living out our daily experiences. For example, when we determine someone is lying to us, we have made a judgment about what is true versus what is false. Or, if someone calls us an idiot, we make a judgment as to whether that was a right or wrong thing to say. When we make a mathematical calculation, we make a judgment regarding if we believe the calculation creates an accurate result. If we see a man in a parking lot harming a young child, we make a judgment and hopefully intervene. More facts that are undeniable include that we human beings will physically die. That is to say, our bodies will fail to cease and function. Equally undeniable is that we are more than atoms, molecules, proteins, cells, organs, organ systems, and a bit of biochemical energy. Just as it is unreasonable and irrational to believe that a computer's hardware created and/or accounts for a computer's software, In the same way, it is irrational to say our bodies somehow account for our personality, soul, or spirit. It is irrational to believe that our personality, our ability to reason, our ability to have complex abstract thoughts, our knowing right from wrong, our ability to see ourselves and ponder existential questions, and our ability to love and to forgive are caused by merely physical things. To believe that all things are merely physical is no different than a sibling exclaiming to his mother as they entered the theater to watch his sister's high school play, "Look, Mom, the bricks of the building and wood of the stage created and communicated the content of the play they are putting on." This book will not make an extensive defense of these simple realities, for they are self-evident, but the reader is free to try and use reason and logic to prove them wrong. For those who disagree with my assertions, I ask that you at least allow for the possibility that they are true and thus move forward. So, where do we come from and what happens to us when our bodies die? These are entirely reasonable questions. In fact, for a reasoning sentient being and a being that has the capacity to love, they are the questions of life. And yet, how many people seriously ponder those questions? I have observed that very few are willing to seriously ponder those questions. Some of the reasons people don't ponder those questions are as follows. Some are simply afraid to ponder the questions. They like existing, they like their life in this world, and fear causes them to stay away from the questions. They would much prefer to pretend death will not happen to them, or if it does, it is a long way off. Some have believed the falsehood that they are just atoms and molecules, and so they believe their lives are merely a physical existence, so when their bodies die, they cease to exist. As such, fear would also keep many of them away from pondering that end. I assert that this is an untenable position to regularly contemplate for both a reasoning being as well as a being who knows true love. A physicalist, a person who believes all of human life can be accounted for by mere physical things, must deny certain capacities, abilities, and traits of both our persons and our experiences to hold to that view. For example, the concept of forgiveness between two people is a spiritual or metaphysical concept that cannot rationally be reduced to a chemical cause. And just because it cannot be reduced to chemicals does not mean it is not real. That claim would commit the fallacy of begging the question. Having a physicalist worldview does not prove that physicalism is a correct understanding of reality. For many, perhaps the majority, religion comes in to provide what they believe are reliable answers to the question, what happens to us when our bodies die? Many religious leaders have been taught the answers from their teachers, and they were taught by their teachers, etc., over the generations. So, what is this thing called religion? Before we can have a rational and meaningful discussion about something, we need to define it correctly or else we are wasting our time. The popular definition of religion is the things people believe and the behavior they engage in regarding God, gods, things, spiritual or metaphysical, after-death existence or morality. This is the commonly held definition of religion that the people of the world believe. This definition of religion has many millions of voices informing the billions who inquire about God and his role in human life. There are many different religions and religious beliefs, many of which lead to conflict. The definition that Joshua of Nazareth gives to religion is the following. The things people believe and do in regard to God, spiritual or metaphysical things, human life and death, that have no basis in my teachings or which nullify or work against my teachings. This view or definition of religion has one voice informing those who inquire about God and his role in human life. Footnote. See Mark chapter 7. The term religion is synonymous with the term tradition in that passage. Here is the passage. Quote, "And Jesus said to them, rightly did Isaiah prophesy of you, hypocrites, as it is written in the Hebrew scripture. This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far away from me. But in vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines, that is, truths from God, the precepts of men. Neglecting the commandment of God, you hold to the tradition or religion of men." Thus, Jesus was also saying to them, "You are experts at setting aside the commandment of God in order to keep your tradition or religion." This distinction is critical between the common definition of religion and Joshua of Nazareth's definition of religion. The term religious will be defined as people who believe some god or gods exist and who have practices around those god beliefs, which beliefs and practices have no reasonable basis in Joshua of Nazareth's teachings. Please read that again and understand the distinction between the definition and the term used by agnostics and atheists against people who hold God beliefs. Here's the definition again. The term religious will be defined as people who believe some god or gods exist and who have practices around those god beliefs, which beliefs and or practices have no reasonable basis in Joshua of Nazareth's teachings. The definition above that I just read does not mean that all religious people are wrong about all things God, nor does it mean that all of their practices are meaningless or harmful. As I said, it simply means they have no basis in Joshua of Nazareth's teachings. Most people who hold God beliefs, which cancel out or nullify Joshua's teachings, are religious people. But that does not mean that all religious people have beliefs or practices which cancel or nullify Joshua's teachings. It is extremely important that the reader understand that I am using the historical person of Joshua of Nazareth as he reveals himself through his own words in the four gospel books as my standard to make points, distinctions, and judgments about religion, Christianity, and God. This definition can be defended by comparing what a religious person says against the teachings of Joshua of Nazareth in those four gospel books. It is just as important to consider what Joshua of Nazareth did not say as it is to consider what he did say. Many atheists and others hostile to the belief that God exists often use the term religious to describe any person who believes a god or gods exist. That way to define religious is significantly different to the way I am defining it in this book. Do you see the distinction? Both views, that of the followers of Joshua of Nazareth and that of non-theists and others of their ilk, have in common that religious people are in error about something. Joshua says that people who hold beliefs and practices which hide, contradict, cancel out, or nullify his teachings are in great error. Non-theists and others like them say that any person who believes a god or gods exist and expresses or communicates that belief in some way is religious and in error about all their God beliefs. That definition is not a valid judgment, or at least it cannot be proven to be true. My definition of religious can be defended against the standard of Joshua of Nazareth and his teachings in the four gospel books. Non-theists have no standard to defend their definition of religious, although most would say science. As we shall see, science cannot prove that God does not exist, and in fact, the physical evidence clearly points to a creator-designer. Furthermore, science is lost in terms of its ability to address some of the most important concepts, which concepts are metaphysical, by the way, like love, forgiveness, justice, etc. The simple truth is that all people have some beliefs about the reality they experience each day. What is important? What is not? What is worth pursuing and what is not? What is valuable and what is not? Why am I getting out of bed today? People have beliefs as to how the earth and its life was created. If people reject the irrational view that all the amazing, diverse, genetic code-based, complex organic machines we call organisms on the planet had no designer, now see the Intelligent Design books for a robust defense of this simple reality, then they reasonably wonder about the designer creator. People have beliefs about their nature and human nature in general. If people reject the irrational view that mere physical particles, that is atoms, molecules, proteins, cells, organs, and organ systems of our body, can account for all aspects of our existence, including our ability to reason, to know right from wrong, to be sentient, which is to have emotions caused by perceptions or experiences, and to love. Love, as defined by Joshua of Nazareth, is selfless behavior motivated by compassion, the opposite principle to evolution's supposed mechanism of survival of the fittest. Then they reasonably wonder about what their soul is, as well as their mind or spirit, and what will happen to those metaphysical components. What will happen to them when their body dies? If non-theists are honest with themselves and others when asked what happens to them when they die, would say something to the effect of, I cease to exist. All my experiences and memories and important relationships I had in life are gone, lost to an empty void of nothingness. No love will endure. No cherished events or memories or people will endure. Every valuable and meaningful thing I experienced in life will be gone, wiped out, erased. Everyone I love will be lost in an empty black void of nothingness. If we as human beings are doing a halfway decent job at questioning those fundamental things about human existence, about our existence, about my existence, then we are doing well. If we are not exploring the most important questions of life, then we are not living a full life, but rather a half life. If we redefine our or ignore love's true nature and meaning, then we are living a half life. However, when we turn to religion for those answers and deny reason when doing so, we do not do well. Religion is important to billions of people. It is fair to say that we human beings tend to be religious or spiritual beings. In fact, over 90% of the human beings on the planet, if asked how or why do you exist, would have some answer that would typically be deemed religious or spiritual. While that does not prove anything regarding God claims, it does show that the human mind has a reasonable default view, most likely based on simple observation and deductions, like complex things require a designer, or beings which have spiritual or metaphysical components must have a sufficient cause of those components. New section, the reasonableness of the existence of God. It is only reasonable for people to be religious or spiritual, since believing that we are merely a physical entity is not reasonable. Nor is it reasonable to believe that non-organic machines like an automobile just happened through natural forces. We know, based on the mind we were given, that a designer must exist to account for even just the physical, complex, organic machines that are our bodies or other life forms on the planet. I would say that to believe that all things evolved from nothing or from hydrogen gas or from a giant explosion is irrational, and yet that is the basic premise of naturalistic evolutionary doctrine. The fact is that well over 90% of the humans on the earth believe a god or gods exist and are reasonable for doing so. For example, it is unreasonable to believe that a computer created itself, and further that the hardware somehow created the software, or the software was integrated into the hardware by natural forces. And yet, this is the basic belief of those who deny the requirement of a designer to account for complex machines with interdependent subsystems, or who deny spiritual or metaphysical realities of human nature. Our abilities of self-awareness, sentience, the ability to experience emotions based on and connected to thoughts, perceptions, and experiences, internally knowing what is right from wrong, being able to reason abstractly with no physical things to support that reasoning. All these abilities of human beings cannot reasonably be accounted for by mere physical matter. Atoms, molecules, proteins, cells, tissues, organs, organ systems, and a bit of biochemical energy simply cannot adequately account for our human abilities or our experiences. To believe that mere physical objects can somehow account for our abilities and experiences is to believe that the bricks, mortar, wood, metal, and plastic of the theater can account for the things being conveyed by the actors performing a Shakespeare play in the theater. Or it is similar to believing that a computer's hardware created or can account for the computer's software. New section, the bicycle illustration. As I have stated, our physical aspect alone clearly requires a designer. This is self-evident due to the fact that things, organic or inorganic, with relatively complex interrelated systems or subsystems that work together to make the whole work, in no way could have come together by chance, but rather require a designer. That is to say that the probability is zero that those interdependent subsystems or the forces that built them knew how to integrate with each other in order to accomplish the purpose of the machine and its end result. Furthermore, the probability is zero that those interdependent subsystems just integrated themselves through random chance. Let's explore and explain this important concept using a relatively simple inorganic machine, a bicycle, as an example. A bicycle has several component systems. The frame needs to be designed to be able to bear the load of the rider and the forces they will experience using the whole machine. The frame is made up of various pieces of material joined in such a way as to both bear the load of the rider as well as connect or integrate the other component systems to the machine. It also includes a seat for the rider to rest their body on while on the machine. The machine needs a steering system to enable the rider to direct the bike. The steering system is made up of several tubes that need to rotate while staying firmly attached to the frame, as well as handlebars the rider can use to direct the front wheel. The machine needs a braking system to allow the rider to stop the bike in a safe fashion. The braking system is made up of cables, springs, clamps, and pads, all working together to allow the rider to apply different amounts of friction against the wheels in order to slow the wheel's rotation. The machine needs a way to move across the ground so the rider can travel faster than just walking or running. The motion system is made up of wheel rims, rubber tires, spokes, axles, and bearings to hold the wheels to the frame while still enabling the wheels to rotate freely. The machine will need an engine, in this case the rider's muscles, and a way to transfer the power the engine produces to the means the machine will use to move forward, a drive system. This system is comprised of pedals, which take the power of the engine and transfer it to round gears, which are connected to a chain, which transfers the engine's force to the rear wheel to spin the wheel. Can you see that a relatively simple machine like a bicycle is made up of several subsystems, and that the whole machine could not work without each of the subsystems being properly integrated into the other subsystems? Please remember that in the case of the bicycle, even the subcomponents, like the brake system or the propulsion or drive system, have multiple components that also reasonably require a designer. Here are some questions that reveal that the simple machine, the bicycle, requires a designer. How would the drive system come together and know how to orient itself on the frame? How would the braking system create itself and know how to orient itself to the propulsion system and the frame? How would the steering system create itself and know where and how to attach to the load-bearing system? Is it not unreasonable to believe that a simple machine like a bicycle could somehow arise and exist without a mind designing it? The mathematical probability is essentially zero. That is to say that even with billions of years of trial and error, a bicycle forming itself without a mind designing it is as likely as having a can at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean and you flying over the ocean in a plane not knowing where the can is and having to drop the ball into the can of the same diameter tens of thousands of times in a row. The idea that natural forces over time could somehow reasonably account for the existence of even a simple machine like a bicycle is untenable or irrational. The problem some have with this line of reasoning is the organic versus inorganic aspects of the argument. In other words, they claim there is some kind of logical error or gulf over trying to compare the organic and the inorganic. My question is, why? Why are cellular structures that provide identical functionality to steel or plastic molecular structures not legitimately comparable? The fact is that organic machines, particularly the bodies of creatures like mammals on this planet, exist, and those machines or bodies are far more complex than the most complicated machine that man has so far created. So the question is, how could even a simple machine like a bicycle exist without a mind designing both the subsystems as well as how those subsystems have to integrate to connect in order for the whole machine to accomplish its purpose? Given a few billion years and the forces of nature, will even a simple machine with just a few interdependent subsystems arise without a designer directing its creation? The laws of thermodynamics are well-established physical laws that have no reasonable scientist questioning them. The second law of thermodynamics states that the total entropy, that is disorganization, of an isolated system can only increase over time. Here's a fuller definition of entropy. Quote, the degradation of the matter and energy in the universe to an ultimate state of inert uniformity, a process of degradation or running down, or a trend to disorder. Unquote. That's from Merriam-Webster Dictionary. In other words, simpler words, the second law of thermodynamics states that physical matter will become less organized over time. particles will disperse and/or degrade into its simplest form. That, dear reader, is the exact opposite of what naturalistic evolution claims. Evolutionists claim that matter naturally became more complex and ordered over time. The reasonable view is that the natural forces of nature will not produce biomechanical machines of even simple complexity. It requires a creative conceptualization of a reasoning mind to order the components of even a simple machine, and it needs specifically directed and controlled energy and physical manipulation or shaping to bring into existence the machine. How much more so a complicated machine with many complicated interrelated and interdependent subsystems or components? For more complicated inorganic machines, consider some manufacturing plants or an automobile or space shuttle. Do not be misled by the lottery fallacy. That is the argument that extremely unlikely things happen regularly, like someone winning the lottery. The lottery is a chance-based game of guessing the same number, a number of a fixed length, that will be posted or drawn randomly by someone. As more and more people play the lottery, the probability that someone wins is quite high. Thus, someone regularly wins the lottery. In other words, the probability is quite high or very likely that someone will win the lottery as more and more people guess the six-digit number. However, the argument that a bicycle and its related subsystems would just form over time by natural forces is like saying that a particular person will win the lottery and in fact has a much lower probability than a bicycle just happening through natural forces. In other words, it is like saying that Jack Goodluck will win the next lottery. So, for example, if a lottery is held in a six-state area in the U.S., and that six-state area has 25 million people in it, what would be the probability of saying the individual Jack Goodluck, who lives in small town in one of those six states, will pick the winning number that will be drawn at the conclusion of the lottery? It is a similar probability that the bicycle's steering system will just randomly happen by itself. A simple truth is that unlikely things do not happen regularly. An intelligence design proponent, Dr. Hugh Ross, calculated the probability of life on the Earth occurring at 1 in less than 10 to the 282nd power, or less than 1 in 10 to the 282nd power. For comparison's sake, some estimate that there are approximately 10 to the 80 atoms in the known universe. Therefore, the probability of life occurring purely, naturally, and randomly on the Earth is for all practical purposes zero. For a good explanation of the lottery fallacy, see the website rightreason.org. To argue that since life exists, it proves that the probability arguments like Mr. Ross are wrong is far less reasonable than to theorize that a designer must exist to account for those machines. In other words, throwing away the science of probability theory because you don't like where it takes you is far less reasonable than theorizing that a superior being created life on the planet. Now, take the next step. What about biological organic machines or organisms that can self-replicate, self-heal, or have automated systems that defend against harmful agents? Can you imagine a bicycle that could fix itself without a mind intervening? Or a car that could diagnose its own problems and have a system that could deliver the repair? Mankind is very creative and will probably be able to build machines like this in the future, but only because we have a mind to conceptualize and design such machines and because we have organic machines to learn from. Stated another way, engineers regularly learn from the created world and get many of their ideas by reverse engineering the creator's designs. It is a fact that the complexity of, for example, the human body far exceeds the most advanced computers and machines man has made or will be able to make in the foreseeable future, even with all the accumulated knowledge and design skills. And even if man can eventually duplicate those functions, it will only be through reverse engineering the incredibly complex organic machines that are the biological creatures on the earth, and using the metaphysical mind operating system and application mankind was given by the Creator. The human body alone is not not even considering the brain is an engineering and design marvel that the smartest human engineers and designers cannot even approach in terms of complexity and function. Think of all the interrelated and interdependent systems the human body needs to function properly. The skeleton to bear the load, the joints to allow for increased flexibility of the movement of the components, the respiratory system which provides the energy of oxygen to the cells that require it, the digestive system to break down energy-bearing materials to the right level for processing, the nervous system which transmits commands to the mind of the mind to operate our voluntary and automatically sends self-sustaining commands to the involuntary muscles, the ability to see and taste and smell and hear, the reproductive system, the dermatological system, the genetic code system that programs and self-directs the formation of the machine, the immune system that identifies and eliminates harmful agents. Truly, the human body makes even a space shuttle look primitive in comparison. You need to ask yourself this simple question, dear reader. If it is unreasonable for your car or bicycle or phone or computer to exist without somebody designing it, why is it reasonable for your body to exist without somebody designing it? If a simpler machine with interdependent subsystems like a car requires a designer, then why not acknowledge the self-evident truth that a more complicated machine with greater functionality or more complex systems would require an even greater or smarter designer? This might be the first time you are considering the possibility that you have a designer. This ought to make you curious. If you are a person that has been subjected to religion and you are saying, "Yeah, I know God exists," please consider the possibility that the God religion has taught you about is not the creator. Furthermore, it is unreasonable to believe that complex physical systems or machines comprised of interdependent subsystems can exist without a designer. Again, it is unreasonable to believe that a car or a computer would just form itself from the raw materials if given enough time. You are free to read the many, many words of those who would try and convince you otherwise, but as you will see, there are many words, and the complexity associated with those many words and the concepts those words form and advocate have as their purpose trying to hide a very simple and self-evident truth. We will look at the practice of using complexity to hide things in a later chapter. Comparing the most advanced human-designed machine like the space shuttle to the organic machine which is the human body is to embarrass the designer of the space shuttle as being ignorant, rudimentary, or puerile engineers. The human body, with a genetic code language that controls self-replication and functions, and is interdependent systems with its functions like self-healing and the self-regulating immune system, is so far more advanced than the space shuttle that it is ferociously irrational to claim that there is no designer behind the organic machines of the earth. It is true that claiming the Christian God is that designer does not logically follow, as the non-theists rightly point out. The designer's existence is evident, but the identity of that designer must be established using good inductive and deductive reasoning, observation, and perhaps the designer communicating to humanity. Therefore, human beings are inherently religious or spiritual because we find ourselves having the abilities listed above, and we find ourselves using those abilities to, for example, look at flutterbys and sunsets and appreciate their beauty and marveling at aspects of the creation. Knowing we have wronged someone and sensing guilt, being willing to die for someone out of love for them. And we know that even though we cannot sense or physically account for the abilities that we have, that they are real and that they do exist, and mere physical things, atoms, molecules, proteins, cells, tissues, organs, organ systems, i.e. building blocks, cannot account for those abilities nor our experiences nor for the design of the things created, just like a computer's hardware cannot account for its software, nor can the hardware create itself. Non-theists will counter, "But in time we will understand that those abilities have a physical cause." Really? Time and physical investigation is going to enable us to understand that a computer's hardware really did write or account for the software? Time and physical investigation is going to finally find the physical nature of numbers? Time and physical investigation is going to reveal the physical nature of reason and logic. Time and physical investigation is going to reveal the physical cause behind a person willingly giving their life away for another person. Time and physical investigation is going to prove that the concept of forgiveness is physical. The truth is that time will not do that, for metaphysical or spiritual reality exists and is the best and only reasonable explanation for these things. Please do not choose the path of the irrational or maintain irrational hopes to avoid the simple truth that is right in front of you. Another defense the non-theists will raise is, oh, those are old arguments that the author is making. They have been debunked for years. Or, expert so-and-so has written a great book proving this fellow's arguments are wrong, or something to that effect. They will then point you to some large, complicated book as their defense instead of providing a clear, brief explanation as to why the arguments I offer are not valid. Stated another way, the person arguing against the evident truths stated here cannot boil down the immense complexities that their favorite author offers in their book because they do not understand them, and for good reason. They cannot understand them because there are contradictions hidden in all the complexity. It is no different than a fellow from one religious sect trying to convert another fellow into his sect by handing him a 600-page book on theology from his esteemed professor at the seminary. We will deal with using complexity in the Hiding in Complexity chapter later. Again, those who point to experts so-called to refute the simple truths put forth here do this because simple truth cannot be refuted, and since they are unwilling to submit to the truth in this domain, they believe they need to come up with some defense. There is no reasonable refutation of the self-evident fact that complicated machines with interdependent systems, whether man-made inorganic or God-made organic, require a designer. And as we shall see, mere physical things cannot in any reasonable way account for the most important concept and aspect of life that we human beings experience and grapple with, that is, true love. Yet, one other quite silly response that people will provide to the "who created you" question is, "well, my mom and dad did." Well, I would respond to that person, "did your parents design and create you? I'd like to talk with them about their design planning and how they accomplish sentience, abstract reasoning, and a moral knowing, as well as the easier stuff like how they designed your brain to function." To say your parents created you is like saying the guy who drives the iron delivery truck to the auto plant created the plant's output, an automobile. The truth is that your parents just brought the raw materials together, and then the designer's magic happened to create you. So, having put forth a major premise of this book, that the billions of human beings that cover the earth are reasonably religious or spiritual or have existential God beliefs to account for their existence, let us continue to build the framework and take a brief look at how mankind is doing and if religion is helping humanity be better as time moves forward. Or stated another way, let us take a brief look at some of the facts and realities about human existence that meaningfully add to the larger framework that we are building and the worldview we are addressing so that we may make good judgments as to whether Christianity is a successful failure. Chapter summary. We exist and we have a cause for our existence. Observation, reason, and logic leave no other option. Given the complexity of merely our physical existence, the only reasonable conclusion is that a designer exists. A designer and creator capable of understanding and putting together all the complex systems of the human body. Complex bioorganic machines with interdependent subsystems just don't exist by random natural forces. We clearly have metaphysical or spiritual aspects to our person or nature, and to deny that is irrational and demonstrating a physicalist bias. It is reasonable for people to have God beliefs about God or to believe that a creator exists.